Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for a Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be discussing their latest release, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Volunteering and Giving Back. The book shares a collection of 101 inspiring stories of purpose and passion. Good morning, Amy. Welcome back to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Johnny. Thanks for having me back. I love talking about my books with you.
Wonderful. It is always a pleasure to have you on the air with me. Volunteering and Giving Back is a terrific book. When I read the stories, it reminded me of my German mom, Diane Heise. She taught me a long time ago that until we try to put ourselves beyond our comfort zone, we will not realize we have what it takes to make a difference in a person's life and, of course, in ours. So congratulations on the release of this wonderful, wonderful book.
Thanks. It's I looked at it a few days ago, and it was number one on Amazon in the volunteering category. And that was before it actually went on sale. It only went on sale on August 18th.
Fantastic. Why did Chicken Soup decide to dedicate a book to volunteering and giving back?
We did a book maybe 10 or 15 years ago about volunteering, and it was a very popular book, and people are still coming to us and saying, I need to buy 100 copies to give to all my volunteers at a volunteer appreciation event, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
right.
I thought, let's do it again, but with this giving back component also, because it's not just about volunteering. It's also about giving back financially, because you can give of your time or you can give of your resources.
Right.
And also with social media and the internet, there are different ways now that people are volunteering, different ways they're finding volunteering opportunities. So I thought it was time to make a new book because it was popular in the past, this topic, because we get so many stories from our writers about volunteering. They write stories about volunteering that they send in for other books on other topics. And also, I see how happy it makes our writers to be volunteers. It really expands their lives. I think it's only when you serve others that you are really aware of your own gifts. So I thought it was time for us to put out a book just on this topic, and it seems to have struck a very responsive chord out there.
What I like about the book, it gives us a complete mosaic of so many different people from so many different backgrounds and different settings that you really can plug in just when you think about, you know, well, should I volunteer with this? Should I volunteer with that? And then the passion, the satisfaction that one gets from doing just that, I thought it was a uniquely different book from others in the sense that it really served as a motivation in itself.
I think you're right. I looked for very broad diversity in the stories. And so there is something in there for everyone. And we have people engaging in all kinds of volunteer activities. And we also have people from all walks of life. So we have very wealthy people volunteering. And we have people volunteering by going back and working at the same soup kitchen where they had been given their meals for a while, and now they're back on their feet and they're going back to help other people who are going through a hard time. So it really covers every kind of person who volunteers and every kind of volunteering activity you could engage in.
Yes, yes. The book is about you, as in you, not me, me, me. That's what I like about the book.
But you know what's funny is that every single story talks about how the biggest beneficiary of the volunteering was the volunteer.
Right.
Every story says, well, really, I'm the one who benefited the most.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to look at it purely selfishly, volunteering actually does make you feel good. It's the volunteer who always feels that he or she got the best of the deal.
So true. Carrie Morgridge wrote an excellent foreword for this book. Please share that with us.
Yeah, let me tell you a little bit about Carrie. Carrie married John Morgridge, and John Morgridge's father, also named John Morgridge, was one of the founders of Cisco Systems, which is that, you know, huge technology mm-hmm. company, very successful. And so Carrie and her husband have made a family foundation, the Mortgage Family Foundation, and they do so much good in the world. They live in Denver. They live in Steamboat Springs in Colorado. They live in Florida. They really give a lot back in the state of Colorado, where they spend a good amount of their time. And they also give back a lot in Florida. And they are passionate about volunteering. Their kids volunteer. They focus a lot on schools in Colorado. They help schools a lot, but they do all kinds of things with their foundation. And so the royalties that Carrie is getting for writing her foreword for this book mm-hmm. are going to her her pet charity in Colorado, which is the Mile High United Way in Denver. Mm-hmm. She wrote in her foreword about how you need to find your own way of volunteering and giving back. So she said you can give of your time. You can give of what she calls your treasure. She said there's nothing wrong with just giving money instead of time. If you have money and you don't have time, give money. She gives time and money. She's full-time volunteering and giving back. And she says also there's nothing wrong with picking the volunteer activity that you love. If all your friends say, oh, you have to come and help us with Habitat for Humanity, hey, if you don't like hammering nails, you don't have to do that. You can find your own way to give back. For example, she loves building things. Mm-hmm. Her husband loves reading books to children. So he reads to children, and she does construction. And she says one way of volunteering is not more important or better than another way of volunteering. You have to do whatever gets you excited, what you're passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And so her point is that as you read this Chicken Soup for the Soul book about all the different ways that you can volunteer and give back, you should find your own route to volunteering and giving back, whatever makes you happy, and don't feel you have to do what your friends are doing.
The introduction you wrote was equally wonderful too. So please share that with us.
Well, I started that introduction with one of my favorite Chicken Soup for the Soul stories. It was in the very, very first Chicken Soup for the Soul book back in 1993. And I don't think it's a true story, but it's one of these mm-hmm. great anecdotes that really matters to people. And it's about a tourist who's walking along a beach in Mexico, and he sees a man bending down every so often to pick up a stranded starfish and throw it back into the sea. And the tourist, he asks the man, why are you bothering? You can't possibly save the thousands of starfish that have washed up on shore. Oh, and by the way, I know they're called sea stars now, but I like starfish better, the old name. So the tourist says to the man, how are you going to make a difference given the immensity of the problem? And the do-gooder bends down, picks up another starfish, tosses it into the water, and says, made a difference to that one. And that's the point. There's nothing wrong with making a difference one life at a time, one little bit of help at a time. If you have 5 hours to give in a whole year, it still makes a difference to give those 5 hours, even if someone else gives 5 months of their time to volunteering. So the point is to do it with passion, do whatever you can, whatever you have the time and resources to do. And what I did in my introduction was I took people through the whole book. I went through all of the incredible chapters in the book. I gave a story as an example of each chapter and what that chapter was about how you can learn about how parents reconnect with their children through volunteering, particularly during those teenage years. Answering some questions that people don't really know about, like what happens to those toys that you give to Toys for Tots? Where do they go? How people give back after they've been the recipients of charity themselves. I mean, there's just so many aspects to this book. So I gave a little guided tour of the whole book. And I think if you go on Amazon and you look on Search Inside, you could probably read the introduction, and that will give you a guided tour mm-hmm. of the book so you can see if it appeals to you.
It's a wonderful guided tour that you gave, and I thought that was wonderful that you highlight some of those stories that grabs me from a standpoint of in reading the various stories. These are people that are definitely passion-driven.
You know, sometimes people didn't even start out with a passion. Like some people were just told, you have to go do community service, something like that. So they would do it reluctantly, and they would find that the work was so meaningful that they almost immediately became passionate about it, and then continued volunteering long past the number of hours they were required to give.
You always come up with some wonderful graphics for your book, and one of the graphics that I saw on this particular book is the significance of the heart-shaped photo. Of course, it's been constructed by two hands, but what I like about it is that if you pay attention to it very carefully, it's actually a male and a female hand, correct? Or am I just getting too old?
No, it is. It's a male hand and a female hand. And together they're making one of those hearts. And that's become a very famous thing. Like Taylor Swift makes that heart with her hands. And it's kind of hokey. And I really resisted it for a while because I thought, oh, it's so hokey. But it turns out people really love that image. And I felt that in the case of this volunteering book, it was very appropriate because it is two different people and their hands are coming together to make a heart. And here's a funny story. We have a food line out there, and we're thinking we're going to focus just on soup going forward because that's really where people expect to see food from us.
Yeah.
And we've just redesigned the packaging with the help of a consulting firm. And when they sent us various packaging ideas, one of the ideas they sent to us was these hands making a heart. And I didn't like them at all. And my husband didn't like them. We're the owners of the company. We didn't like them at all. I actually thought it was a joke. I thought they threw it in to make us laugh. Well, it turns out they were quite serious. Everyone else in our office loved the hands making the heart. We put them on the soup packaging, put the soup on the shelves in a chain, a food chain in Pittsburgh. And the soup sales went up 10 times versus what they had been with our old packaging.
No kidding. Wow.
So I'm all in favor now of the two hands coming together and making the heart.
Yeah. Wonderful. That's a wonderful story.
Yeah. I could tell a good story about when I was wrong.
What are the 10 chapters covered in the book?
Our first chapter is called Who's Helping Whom, because it makes the whole point that the volunteers end up saying they were the ones who were helped the most, not their supposed clients. The second chapter is called A Family Affair, and I love these stories about families going and volunteering together, husbands and wives volunteering together, or parents and children, and the parents report on how they bonded with their children over this shared volunteering activity, how it brought teenagers out of their grumpy shells. So I thought that was a great chapter to include. Then chapter 3 is called Lessons Learned, because so many people learned amazing lessons for their lives from doing volunteering work. And so we passed on some of those lessons. And then I did a whole chapter on Christmas. Chapter 4 is called The Spirit of Christmas, because, of course, a lot of people volunteer at Christmas time and may not have time at other times of year. And so that chapter was a lot of fun with people doing all kinds of different Christmas volunteering. And then Chapter 5 is called Giving Back. And these are people who were the recipients of help and then went and helped other people once they got back on their feet. So I thought that was, I loved it when I had somebody saying, you know, I went to the soup kitchen, and now 2 years later, I'm back on my feet, and now I work at that soup kitchen. And then in chapter 6, I talk about the sense of community that people get from being volunteers and how they become friends with each other and they become friends with their clientele. And so chapter 6 is called No Strangers Here, because it's about the immediate and deep bonding that goes on with people who were strangers as a result of volunteering. Chapter 7 is called A Calling, because some people, they just don't even know what caused them to do something, but they just knew they had to do it. And so I thought that was a really cool chapter. Like one guy, Jeremy Russell, who I actually met Friday night in Denver, he was in a terrible car accident, and he survived it, but with a traumatic brain injury, and he's never gotten back his memories of the 10 years or so prior to the accident. And he also had one of his legs amputated as a result of the accident. And Jeremy had always been artistic and came from an artistic family, but he had never done any 3D art. And after his TBI, when he was emerging from his coma and starting to recover, he discovered that he was a sculptor. And now he is carving a 50-foot wide bald eagle inside a mountain in Colorado. And it's a tribute to our servicemen and women. Mm-hmm. So this was just a calling. He just all of a sudden said, I have to carve this bald eagle inside this mountain. And so we have really interesting stories like that in Chapter 7. And then Chapter 8 is about people who use their artistic skills, who use their building skills, their musical skills. And Chapter 8 is called With My Own Hands. And it's about people who do crafts and do other things with their hands, and that's their volunteer work. And then Chapter 9 is called Filling a Need, and that's people who just saw a need and said, I'm just going to go and do this. Like one guy, Paul Heitzenreiter, who I also met in Denver last week, he was driving along and saw a shivering homeless man in Denver, a young guy, maybe, you know, late teens. And he had a red blanket in his trunk. He had just cleaned out his parents' house. He jumped out of the car, opened the trunk, gave this red blanket to this young man who was so grateful. And then Paul jumped back in his car and then said, wait a minute, I can provide blankets for a lot of shivering homeless people in Denver. And from that was born the Red Blanket Project, which has now given out hundreds of blankets to needy people. And then Chapter 10 is called Every Living Thing. And that chapter is about animals, about people adopting shelter dogs or other work they did saving animals.
Wonderful. In your opinion, how does volunteerism help shape our country's values?
You know, it's interesting. I have discovered that Americans, and probably Canadians too, because we're all pretty much the same, but we're really into volunteering. We're into charity, making donations, tithing, all of those things. That does not happen in other countries. Like I was talking to some people in France, and they were saying that mothers don't even go and volunteer in the schools. That they are astounded when they find out how much Americans volunteer and how involved we are in every way. I mean, when you're a mom, you just expect that you're going to volunteer in school. Even if you're a full-time working mom, you're going to do something. Even if it's baking cupcakes at midnight, you're doing something. Mm-hmm. We all volunteer. We're raised that way. We're raised to go to college and then make contributions to our college. We're raised to give money in our community. This is what we do. It doesn't work that way in other countries. So I don't know how it came about, how Americans became such a generous group of people, and Canadians too. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it happened here and it hasn't happened in other countries, but we are different that way.
One thing for sure, in the years I've been here, when we talk about cultures and so forth, I think that came about from a standpoint of everyone came to the United States in the course of their lifetime or their grandparents and whatnot. You're in a new place, you don't know anything, and you need someone to kind of give you a helping hand. I find it very, very unique from that standpoint of view. Like, hey, let me stand up for you. Sort of having a hand reaching backwards to help you. Whereas in cultures where I came from, in Malaysia, perhaps, I know we do have a lot of helping hands, don't get me wrong, from organized helping hands, so to speak. But at the same time, you are in a culture to whereby it's been around for so long and you're on your own. You can't count on anybody else. You have to do everything on your own. It's good news and bad news because then you find that you really are not being able to have this greater good mentality out there to sort of serve as a beacon for you to really connect with others.
Well, it is true. We're all descended from immigrants, except for the Native Americans in our country. And so we all do have an awareness of our forefathers who might have not been as well off. I mean, I know my own relatives, my on one side, they came over and my great grandfather sold tea from a push cart in Boston. And on the other side, my great grandparents ran a laundry in New York City. So yeah, people did start out with nothing and built themselves up. And so we all have that awareness that we shouldn't take for granted where we are now in life.
Yeah. So I think over the generation, it just sort of became part of the DNA, which it's so rich here in the United States.
Well, I think it makes us a lot happier because I can't stress enough how strong this theme was that ran through the book, that people who volunteer are happier people.
It's a very fulfilling life, for sure. Please share with us Carrie Mogridge's wonderful story, Where Do Those Toys Go?, from the chapter, The Spirit of Christmas.
Carrie told me about this when we were talking about her writing the foreword, and I said, oh, you got to write this story, because she was telling me about the Toys for Tots program, and she and her family went and volunteered at one of these toy distribution centers. This one was at United Way of Martin County in Florida, and she talked about the whole methodology there and how they would let people come in and choose their toys, and people would spend an hour choosing a toy for each child, and how selfless the people were. For example, they had a raffle every hour where somebody would win a bike, and then if you won a bike, you had to give back a major toy, because each family was allowed to pick like a regular toy for each kid and then one major toy for their family. But if you won the bike, you had to give back your, quote, major toy. So this one family won the bike, so they gave back the major toy that they had selected. But then they announced that they were going to give the bike to the family down the street from them, because that family was even more in need than they were. So now they've given back their major gift because they won the bike, but now they're giving the bike away. And so that really struck her, that no matter where you are in life, you can always find a way to help another family. And the other thing that I learned from this story, and I really wanted to pass this on to people, I didn't realize that Toys for Tots also serves teenagers. And she said they didn't get very many donations for teenagers. It was mostly cologne for the boys and nail polish for the girls. So, I mean, that's not that great, especially cologne for the boys. So she said from now on she's going to buy things for teenagers and put them in that Toys for Tots collection box. Because they call it Toys for Tots, so we just think it's for little kids.
Right.
You know, they should probably say Toys for Tots, and then, you know, in parentheses, and teenagers too, so that we give some, you know, upper age group presents. So anyway, I'm passing that on to everybody else. From now on, put some things in that donation box that are for the older kids.
Wonderful. What would you like for the readers to gain from reading the various stories?
I would like readers to come away with an energy and a desire to volunteer. Because I found that as I was reading all of these stories and editing them, I was getting really jealous because I do volunteer already. I have one really big volunteer commitment that I do in addition to working every day. And I just don't have time to do any more than that. But I came away wishing that I could take on another volunteer activity. And I think that people should come away from reading Chicken Soup for the Soul, Volunteering and Giving Back, with a renewed enthusiasm for finding the volunteer activity that really speaks to them, and maybe an enthusiasm for getting their family involved in a volunteer activity.
That's awesome. That's wonderful. Well, as usual, I've selected several stories from the book as talking points for us. Please give us a quick rundown of the stories and the wonderful impact that the stories have made on the person on the receiving end as well as the person who is giving. That's the essence of this whole book, which is just totally awesome. The first chapter is Who's Helping Whom? The story, The Teacher Learns the Lesson by Linda Bottier.
So Linda talks about the fact that she went to teach a literacy class to adult men, you know, in a not so nice neighborhood. And she was amazed that you had these American men who had never learned to read, even though they were in their, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s. But it was a pretty rough neighborhood, so she was really nervous going in there, this, like, young white girl. And but the men started to protect her. Like, the first night she left the class, she thought somebody was following her. It turned out it was one of the guys, and he was following her car to make sure she got out of the neighborhood okay. She started out with 7 students, all men. They ranged in age from 30 to 63. And by the end of the first month, 4 of those 7 men had quit, but she had 3 left. And these 3 guys were passionate about learning to read, were very protective of her, and she became great friends with them. And they really motivated her, because she realized that here they were, grown men, going back and trying to learn to read. And she realized that she had not been looking forward enough in her own life. And now she's older, and she's looking back, and she says, you know what, if they could go back and start to learn to read when they were already grown men, then there's no reason for me to limit my destiny, and I am going to go ahead and make a new life for myself. And so she really feels that she was the one who benefited the most by learning this determination and this willingness to push the restart button from her clientele.
I love the story because I'm very aware of the neighborhood she talks about. She's an author from Dallas, and she talks about the area Oak Cliff in Dallas. It's a wonderful story. This is, again, about reaching out and wanting to make a difference in the community.
Yeah, and who benefited the most, in her opinion, but herself. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So true. The next story in the same chapter is The Accidental Volunteer by Tony Summers.
So Tony Summers had a sister who was older than her. Her sister Rose had mental and emotional problems and had always been taken care of by their parents. And then when the parents died, the sister, Tony, had to move Rose into an assisted living facility. So she moved her into an assisted living facility, and then Tony, you know, needed to go and visit Rose once a week, but they never had anything to talk about. So they'd talk for a few minutes, and then Rose would kind of withdraw into her own world, and they would just sit there staring at each other. So Tony decided that when she went to visit Rose, she should do something. So she asked the activities director at this assisted living facility if she could perform folk songs and lead a sing-along each week. And thus began her 20-year stint as a volunteer, this assisted living facility. And even when her sister Rose died 5 years later, Tony decided that she would keep going back. And Tony is now 80 years old, and she still goes every other week, and she sings songs with the residents. They tell stories. They share memories about when they were young. They laugh together. And so that was her engaging in a volunteer activity that has now gone on for decades, and it was just a total accident that it happened, and she's thrilled that she goes to this facility every other week.
I chose this story because my dance partner and I, we teach ballroom at a senior living place. It's just a wonderful experience. Once every other month, we would be invited to come and perform for the residents, and to see the faces, the eyes of the residents lit up, and having them share the stories about, you know, I used to do that. I love it. I'm so glad you did this, and so forth. That was the most rewarding experience for us, especially for
me. You know what's great about that, Johnny? I don't know if you remember the books we did with Harvard Medical School, but we did a bunch of Chicken Soup for the Soul books with Harvard Medical School a few years ago, and one of them was called Boost Your Brain Power. And one of the things that the neurologist said was great for older people for keeping their brains healthy was to learn ballroom dancing.
That's correct.
So you're not just giving them a fun time. You're actually helping them fend off Alzheimer's.
Yes, yes. It's wonderful. And we teach twice a month at the Tradition here in Dallas. And they are so excited to see us show up. So it's just a wonderful experience. The next story. Same chapter again. I love this chapter, and that's the reason why I chose 3 stories from this particular chapter alone. The next one is just another wonderful story, A Lesson in Humility by Linda Ristott.
Linda was working at a daytime homeless shelter. That was just where you go during the daytime, but you have to go back to another place to sleep at night. And, I mean, this place was a dump. Like, it was freezing cold. Every time it rained, it would leak. But anyway, Linda was working there one day, and a client named Mary was there, and Mary was counting out her coins. And Mary said, "I'm going to go out for a few minutes, but I'll be back to pick up my stuff." And Linda said, "Okay." Mary came back within a few minutes and put a Burger King bag on Linda's desk and said, "Here, I got you this." And Linda felt humbled and guilty because she didn't want Mary to have spent money on her. Mary had no money, but she accepted her gift graciously because she knew that it would make Mary proud that she was able to go and buy a hamburger for the volunteer. And so Linda ate the hamburger, Mary smiled proudly, and Linda realized that in accepting a gift from this homeless woman, she had given this woman self-respect, right? And made this woman feel that she could still give of herself, because that's such an important thing. Everyone feels better when they share what they have, because if you can give something away, then you feel richer yourself. And I don't mean richer in terms of money, but just richer in terms of life. So that was an important lesson that you should accept from people who you don't think can afford to give. You should still accept from them because they want to give.
Right. So true. That's the reason why I chose that story, because I feel like wealth, what is it? It's not about necessarily money, but it's about the feeling of the ability to give something special to someone else. In this particular case, the lady wanted to give something from the heart. And the receiver, out of respect, accepted. And that's what it's all about. Nothing more, nothing less. And that makes the human experience totally complete. The next chapter, A Family Affair. This is the wonderful chapter. The first story that I selected from this chapter is The Difference Maker by Summer Sorensen Bain.
So this is so funny. You keep selecting stories from people I know. So Summer Sorensen Bain, I met Friday night at our book launch party for this book in Denver, because we had a party to celebrate the book finally going on sale. And The Difference Maker is a story about Summer's son, Kylan, who I met also. He's a charming 10-year-old now. When he was 5, Summer arranged for Kylan to have a pen pal in Uganda. And so the two little boys started writing to each other, and Kylan started saving money to send a birthday gift to his pen pal. And so he printed flyers, and he decided he was going to collect scrap metal. And he collected scrap metal all over his neighborhood, and he started to raise some real money for pen pal in Uganda, enough to send, you know, a farm animal, money for a farm animal, stuff like that. And then Kylan got other kids involved, and he started a youth movement in Denver called the Difference Maker Movement, which is now spreading across the country. And so I met this charming 10-year-old Friday night who is really making a difference in a lot of lives. Yeah. Introducing a lot of young kids to the wonders of volunteering and giving back.
That's a wonderful story. Totally, totally awesome. And having the parents involved too. And I thought that was just totally a unique experience.
And he has two moms and they're both involved with this charity. The family is very happy about the whole thing. In fact, they were wearing the t-shirts, or at least the boy was wearing his Difference Maker t-shirt to the party on Friday.
Fantastic. The next story in the same chapter, Family Affair, It Takes a Village by Judy Davidson.
So you picked another person who we know, because Judy is the mother of one of our, an editor who used to be here, and we were introduced to Judy through her. And Judy worked in a facility where she needed to educate people about AIDS back in the early days of AIDS, when they didn't even call it AIDS. It was called the gay flu. And she brought AIDS education to a campus where, you know, it was brand new. And then she worked at a clinic, and her family helped her raise money at this clinic for AIDS education and to help AIDS patients. And so she just talks about how she's been involved in this movement for decades now to educate people about AIDS, to help people who have the disease, and how her family has always been involved in all of the fundraising and the other activities for this.
She did a wonderful job in terms of really totally passion-driven and got everyone involved, her family. And the fact that she has a different take about AIDS at its inception, I thought it was really something unique and worth to talk about, because there are very few people that would take charge like she did.
Yes, and she got involved very early, before mm-hmm. anybody even knew that it was an epidemic and what it was.
Yeah, that's a wonderful story. The next chapter, Lessons Learned. This is a cute, cute, cute story. Just 20 Hours by Nicole Webster.
I love this story. Nicole was a freshman in college, and her professor in her world history class said that 30% of their final grade would be based on doing a community service assignment. They only had to spend 20 hours doing community service. So Nicole went on the internet, found a tutoring program, and became the tutor for a boy, and she was just going to do it for the 20 hours, but then she really liked the boy. And he didn't even need tutoring. He really just needed a friend. He was just a quiet but very bright little boy who didn't have friends. He was a little different from the other kids at school. And so Nicole met with him twice a week for 2 hours. And so after 5 weeks, she had already completed all of her necessary hours for her class, but she ended up doing this for the entire school year. And then it turns out, because they know that people fall in love with these kids, they make them ahead of time sign something saying they will not try to continue to have a relationship with the child when the school year is up. So she had to very reluctantly say goodbye to this kid who was so upset because they had so much fun together. And one of the points she made in the story was that she was only going to college part-time because she was working full-time to raise the money for the tuition to go to college part-time. Mm-hmm. So she had her schoolwork. She had her job. She wanted to spend some time with her family and friends. She never thought she could find 4 hours a week to do volunteering, and yet she did it. And it was a nice lesson that you can squeeze more into your life. Busy people do more, don't they? The busier you are, the more you can take on. And the other major lesson that she got from this volunteer experience, after she fell in love with this little boy and you know, didn't want to give up the relationship at the end of the year, all of a sudden she had an epiphany. And she realized, wait a minute, I have my own little brother who's the same age mm-hmm. as this kid. I'm not paying any attention to my own little brother. And so she turned her attention back to her own brother and her own sister and made a real effort to become friendly with them. And now they're all best friends. And so she just can't say enough about how much this volunteer mm-hmm. work changed her life for the better.
It's a beautiful story. It just reminded me about my sister and me when we were growing up. Of course, we have different motivations. I did her homework so that she could have good grades, and she did mine so that I could have good grades. It's just not a wonderful sibling relationship.
That's great. My daughter used to do my son's projects, like uh-huh. you know, paper mache projects, anything that right. required art, because she was so good with her hands, and he right. had no idea what to do.
That's what happened to me and my sister. The next story, Lessons Learned, The Old Woman in a Shoe by Marsha Warren Mittman.
Marsha became a college counselor for a bunch of students in Manhattan who were either immigrants or the children of immigrants. And these were very bright students in a special high school, but these were kids whose families had never sent anyone to college in the United States. They had no idea how to do the application process. They didn't know how to visit the schools. They didn't know how to fill out the forms. They didn't even have the postage to mail the applications because this was before you did the common application online. And so she stepped in and helped these kids and worked with them all year. And what a thrill it was when they all got into schools. Every single student who applied was accepted somewhere, and Marcia was ecstatic. And so she says that even though these kids felt that she was such a heroine and helped them so much, she believes that she was the one who benefited the most. She came out of this experience more patient, more aware of the different people out there in society, more understanding, more tolerant, more grateful for what she already had in her life. I mean, her kids had gone to good secondary schools, went off to good colleges. You know, she didn't realize how hard it was for other people to go through the college application process.
I chose this story simply because I think you and I had this conversation once before a long time ago when we talked about unconditional love. No matter where you live, all moms all over the world have one thing in common. They want the very best for their children. And in doing so, what Marcia did was helping the parents of those immigrant children to achieve what they want for their kids.
That is true. That is true. She became everybody's mother. So, yes, it was very fulfilling for her. And it is true. All moms want to mother everybody. We all do that.
Yeah. Yeah. The next chapter, Giving Back. This is a wonderful story, a very heartfelt story. Soap Kitchen. Not soup, but Soap Kitchen by Janice Van Horn Lane.
Janice and her husband had been living well. Her husband had a very good job. Janice didn't even work. And then her husband lost his job, and all of a sudden, they had no money. And they hadn't really saved a lot, and they ended up going to a soup kitchen, which was shocking for them, having lived, you know, very comfortable middle-class lifestyle. And once they became the recipients of government assistance, they realized that while they were given food stamps and they could really buy any food they wanted and they were fine as far as food went, they weren't allowed to buy soap, laundry soap, toothpaste, any personal care items with their food stamps. And so while they had food, they couldn't wash their clothes. They couldn't brush their teeth, and they started to get smelly. And I had no idea. This was a real eye-opener to me. And so
yeah.
When she got back on her feet again, she went to the food pantry that they had frequented when they were going through their rough time, and she said, I want to collect soap and tissues, toilet paper, and other personal care items. And she said when she did that, and she went to the food pantry one day, and she handed an elderly lady a bag that contained a bar of soap and a roll of toilet paper, the woman acted like she had won $1 million. She was so excited to have soap and toilet paper. So that was a real eye-opener for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize, and maybe it's changed now, but at the time that she was receiving government assistance in whatever state she lived in, they didn't give them anything for personal hygiene. They only gave them food.
Right. It's just the bare necessity to survive. This changes everything. It's a wonderful story. And again, it's about the human experience, the human connection. The next chapter, No Strangers Here. I love this story. It's so simple, yet it's so rich and it's deep in a way. A Call a Day Keeps the Loneliness at Bay by Alicia Rosen.
This story involves such a simple volunteer activity, but such an important one. This woman writes that when she was growing up, she noticed that her mom, every night after dinner, would get on the phone and call 5 elderly people every single night. And she would talk to them about, what did you eat that day? Did you notice that the daffodils are coming up in the park? Whatever, just chit-chat. And as a teenager, Alicia couldn't understand why her mother was doing this. And her mother couldn't watch television after dinner. She couldn't read because she spent hours on the phone talking to these 5 elderly people every single day. But now that Alicia's mother is nearing 80, Alicia understands it because now she knows that she is often the only person who telephones her mother in a day. And now she understands why, how important it was that her mother did that for other elderly people. And I just thought, wow, what an amazing idea. What a great volunteer activity that you can do from home. Just call an old person every single day.
We're humans. We are, I guess, the animal kingdom that needs other people. So having a conversation, having someone to talk to, really, truly energizes.
It does. It does. Speaking of elderly people, the next story that you picked was very meaningful to me because it's about, it's called An Honor to Be an Honor Guard by Christian Harch, and it's about something that I hadn't known until my father-in-law died a couple of years ago, and that is that if you have been in military service at any time in your life, the military will send an honor guard from your branch of the service to your cemetery. So when we, when my father-in-law was buried, the army was there, and they did a little ceremony. They gave a flag folded up correctly. It was really nice. And so this man, Christian Harch, he volunteers with a group in southern New Jersey, and they go to all those different funerals. And they, you know, blow their bugles. They'll do the firing of the rifles. They'll do whatever is necessary for that person. One of the volunteers that he works with is 90 years old, but it means a lot to him to honor his fellow servicemen at their funerals.
It's a beautiful story. It reminded me a lot about my foster father, Ben Wisdom. He was in World War II. He was with Patton's Third Army, and he was heavily involved with the veterans. That's how I came to learn about the connection. Steven Spielberg did a wonderful story, A Band of Brothers. That's what the story reminds me of. The next chapter, With My Own Hands, The Garden by John Furman.
Well, you've done it again. You've picked another story from somebody in Denver who I met last Friday at our launch party for Chicken Soup for the Soul, volunteering and giving back. And the party was at John Farnham's house. And
awesome.
His story, yeah, and we had the party in his awesome garden. It was the most beautiful vegetable garden I've ever seen. It was huge. And he has two building lots, and basically they've turned one whole building lot into a produce garden. And one side of the garden is for the food they eat themselves, and the other side of the garden is for the food they give away. And they give away 1,000 pounds of produce from their garden. What happened was years ago, they discovered that kids who get food at school didn't get food on the weekends, didn't get food during summer vacation, didn't get food during, you know, spring break. And they wanted to provide food to the families of those children during those at-risk times. And so it's turned into a major effort where they and their friends have donated tons of food to at-risk families in Denver. And so we actually were able to meet John and his partner, Paul, look at their amazing garden, have this launch party there for the book, and look at the vegetables. And honestly, I never really knew what a lot of vegetables looked like when they were growing. Like, I saw all these green leafy things. Everything looked like kale to me, right? But a lot of the things that looked like kale to me were just like the leaves that are above ground from something delicious like zucchini or squash or whatever. So it was really interesting.
Wonderful, wonderful. The next chapter, Feeling a Need. I Am Because You Are by Jacob Leave. And I chose this story because, to me, it's a very powerful story.
And once again, you picked a story from somebody I know. And I mean, just for the listeners out there, Johnny just picks whatever stories he wants. For some reason, he picked a lot of stories from people that I have met personally. So I sat next to Jacob at a luncheon I went to last year that was for God's Love We Deliver, which is a service in New York that started for AIDS patient and AIDS patients and now delivers food for anybody who has a chronic illness who's at home. And in fact, we have a story in the book from somebody who delivers for God's Love We Deliver. But I sat next to Jacob at this luncheon, and he was telling me about his own charity that he created. It is in South Africa, and he went there 2 decades ago when he was, you know, just out of college. And he saw the need there to help kids go through the whole education process. And now, 20 years later, he leads an organization of 70 employees who have changed the lives already of 2,000 children. And they've basically taken on the job of taking these kids all the way from elementary school through college and just taking care of them all the way through. And his charity is called Ubuntu, and Ubuntu is a word that expresses the interconnectedness of all beings. So I thought that it was a great charity, and this was something where he saw a need, and he said, I'm going to fill this need, and he just discovered this passion, even though, as he describes himself 20 years ago, he was more like a 20-year-old partying and drinking with his buddies, but he became this passionate volunteer, really making a difference.
Well, this whole project was conceived, I believe, at a party.
Yeah.
They were all drinking.
Amazing. Yeah, yes. He's just, I mean, you go from being a careless, irresponsible kid to being this incredible person who now runs a charity with 70 employees that has done good for thousands of children in South Africa. So it shows we can all grow up.
It's a wonderful story. The very last chapter, Every Living Thing, Canine Candy Stripers by W. Bedford Swift. I chose this story because I know it's dear to your heart because it's about animals in honor of 10-year anniversary for Hurricane Katrina.
Right. So this writer, Bradford Swift, he's a former veterinarian. And after Hurricane Katrina, he heard about all of these pets that were abandoned by their owners or where their owners were forced to give them up. And these pets all needed to be rescued and then put out to new homes. And so he was part of this huge volunteer effort where they collected supplies, drove down to Louisiana, collected all of these animals, and then brought them to a prison where the prisoners were taking care of the animals. And then eventually they found them new homes. So he described the whole process they went through to collect the supplies, get the animals, move them to the prison, work with the prisoners to take care of them, and then get them placed into their new home. So I thought it was really fascinating and a look into what happens after a major natural disaster. What happens to all the pets?
Right, right. You have to have someone to look into those types of situations because we worry about the people, and we should by all means. But then you do have a group of people that are focused on other living things as well. In this case, those beloved animals that we have.
That's right. So, yeah, I thought it was important because I know, like in my town, they didn't allow animals in the shelters. You know, we had Hurricane Sandy here where my town was destroyed. And now one of the shelters is allowing people to bring their animals because they realized what a terrible thing it was not allowing people to bring their dogs and cats.
Oh, wow. Wow. So what are some of your favorite stories?
Well, there's one that I really like, and I guess it's partly like you like the natural disaster stories that have to do with your own area. So story 53 in the book is about the great North American ice storm of 1998, which affected millions of people in eastern Canada and the northern United States, and of course where I live in Connecticut. And it talks about how this guy, James Gemmell, was a power company employee, and he went out with all the other employees as a volunteer and just started working to get people's generators up and running. And he lives in a place where there are a lot of farmers, and these farmers were facing the loss of their animals because it was freezing cold. And these poor animals were freezing to death, and so he and the other workers just, they couldn't go to work anymore, and so they just set out to get as many generators set up as they could, and they traveled all over their part of Canada. And he writes near the end of the story, and I'm quoting, "I have an indelible memory of a big, gruff-looking farmer who, lost for words, took me in his arms and hugged me tightly when we managed to put his generator back into service. To him, it meant the difference between life and death for his animals." So I thought it was really nice how the community came together. And I was remembering, he was talking about the Quebec Hydro employees. And I was remembering when those guys came to my street in Connecticut and got our power back on after 8 days without power. And it was cold.
Wow.
And they were walking down the street in their Quebec Hydro uniforms carrying like tools over their shoulders.
Yeah.
And they looked like our saviors, and I was taking pictures of them, and everybody was clapping for them. So it brought all of that back to me. And there was another story I loved that was called Perfect Purple Nails. And this was really, really a heartbreaking story. A mother wrote about how when her daughter was little, they used to volunteer. They would go to an old age home, and her daughter would volunteer to do nail polish for the old ladies in the home. But since her daughter was a little kid, she would bring like neon green and bright purple and all of these colors that weren't right at all for old ladies. But the old ladies would very nicely accept the colors from this little girl. Yeah. And one old lady was shocked, but let the little girl paint her nails like a bright metallic purple. And then, many years later, when her daughter was dying from cancer, a little girl came and volunteered at the hospice and painted her daughter's nails a bright metallic purple. And so things had really come full circle. And her daughter, as she lay there dying, let this little girl put this garish nail polish on her. So I thought that was a great story.
It's a beautiful story. Wonderful, wonderful story. What can we expect from you and Chicken Soup in the coming months?
The big news, besides all of the new books that are coming out, is that our TV show is starting on CBS on October 3rd. It's called Chicken Soup for the Soul's Hidden Heroes. It's a hidden camera show where we put people into interesting situations where they could either ignore someone in need, or they could stop and help someone, or and do the right thing, or be patient with an elderly person, or whatever it is. And those people who do the right thing are Chicken Soup for the Soul hidden heroes. So it will be on CBS. I know in the New York market, the show will be on at 11 a.m. on Saturdays. So probably 10 a.m. in Central and Mountain Time, and then 11 a.m. probably in Pacific Time. But each station will have a different time. But we're very excited about that.
Fantastic. Do you have any advice for someone who is considering to volunteer their time?
Yeah, and I think that this would fall into the recipe for living category also, because I think that volunteering is something that should be in everyone's recipe for life. And I did make a list of 5 reasons you should volunteer, because I knew you were going to ask me this question. So one of my ingredients in the recipe for living and the reason you should volunteer is that volunteering can help you heal. Because we have so many stories in this Chicken Soup for the Soul volunteering book about people volunteering to get over tragedies in their own lives. For example, we had a story from Anne Clark Van Hine, whose husband Bruce died in the line of duty on September 11th. And she talks about how volunteering at the September 11th Family Association as a docent has changed her life, and she's helped other people, including victims of the earthquake and tsunami in Japan. Another great ingredient as a recipe for life is how volunteering can transform children and teenagers. And it's something for every family to remember, whether you're a parent, a grandparent, an uncle, just an interested neighbor. Volunteering can really help kids who are grumpy, going through that rough time of the teenage years. Another great tip I picked up from the book is that volunteering really helps you appreciate your own life, because you do realize how privileged you are. One woman, Sharon Struth, who lives near me in Connecticut, wrote about how she was helping, you know, like repair a dilapidated home in Appalachia. And the woman there kept saying, "Oh, you have such beautiful skin. You have such nice teeth." And Sharon realized that just the regular facial moisturizer and the regular toothpaste she was buying, you know, at a regular store like CVS or something, was not something this woman could have. And it made her so grateful for the basics that she had in her life. A fourth tip is that volunteering is your way to say thank you, to give back to people who have helped you. And we do have so many stories about people giving back. There's nothing wrong with accepting help and then giving back later to people who are behind you. And then the fifth tip and recipe for life is to use volunteering to make you a stronger person, because you discover within yourself new skills, new resilience, new resources that you didn't even know you had when you're asked to bring out the very best in yourself to help other people. So it really is a way of doing some fabulous self-discovery.
So true. So true. Amy, thank you for the wonderful recipes for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. It has been a true pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you.
To all our listeners, please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Marie Georgopoulos. She is an intuitive counselor, healer, and spiritual mentor. Mary will be hosting and conducting her bi-weekly Meditations for Moms series and talk about her worldwide consciousness movement, Meditation for Moms. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Bye-bye.